Are you alone? Feel it getting dirty? Jonas Donskoy dangled Wedgwood out of his jock and left us all gagging on his greasy mitts. Welcome to Teal Town After Dark with your host, Eric Landy. Landy?
Oh my. Well, if you didn't catch that game or you just caught the end of it, it was pretty much back and forth and a roller coaster ride the whole way through. We got lots of offense. We got a goaltender pulled. We've got Jonas Donskoy literally showing some sick moves, doing some sick dangles, and jocks out on the ice. Anyhow, I'm joined, of course, with that lovely intro by Rocket Backhander. And, of course, Chris JWS. Rocket, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm frigid and chilly on the outside and warm and toasty on the inside. I'm the opposite of a 7-Eleven burrito, kids. I'm Rocket Backhander.
Chris, how are you doing? And you're in my neck of the woods now.
Yep, I'm only a handful of miles from you. Yeah, doing well. Now no one can get on me about my baby blue wall. It is now teal.
Wow.
I like your pins.
Yeah. Quickly going over it. It was insane. I think that was that first period just really was an offensive output we haven't seen that this team do in a while. And it was just back and forth and creating lots of drama, but I'll create lots of drama amongst my co-hosts if I don't put up the graphic. Be a part of the show using the hashtag TealTownUSA. You can tweet us at TealTownUSA on Twitter. You can, of course, follow us on the Facebook, Instagram, SoundCloud, and, of course, in the YouTube chat. We check the YouTube chat most often, but I do have the Twitter up on my second monitor, and so we'll be monitoring that as well. And you can tweet any one of us, myself, Rocket Backhander, or Chris JWS, or you can tweet at the main Tealtown USA account. Anyhow, Chris, what was your initial takeaway just of the game?
Yeah, that was a wild one. And it's, you know, there was a lot of good and a lot of bad in that. I mean, the easiest way to say it is A+ in the offensive zone, C- in the neutral zone, and an F in the defensive zone, because they managed to double them up in shots almost all night long. They were out possessing them, but the chances the Coyotes did have, a lot of them were very high quality, and that's why we had that back and forth. I mean, it was entertaining, so there was that. I mean, it was not a boring game to watch, which these Coyote games often are.
Rocket, I mean, what did you take away overall from the game, and just what was, how did you think that they came out of the break?
Okay, first and foremost, Desert Dogs. Excuse me.
Take your obligatory drink there, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. This is not the trap game chip and chase team from 2014-15. Or even 2015 and 16, kids, this is an entirely different animal. And much like a young coyote, they are all mittens and ears right now. But eventually they're going to grow into themselves and be a ferocious beast that's going to, you know, drag your baby off into the woods and eat it. Excuse me, drag your baby off into the desert and eat it. So I don't think you should sleep on this team. And Sharks knew that. So they came in prepared for a young, fast team. So you could see a lot of... You could see the work that they had put in and they did their homework. You could see that they practiced hard. They did the right kind of practices to negotiate this team successfully, unlike the word successfully. And then it was coupled with a good amount of rust from this being the first meeting off their bye week. I think the mix of the two made for a really gut-wrenching juxtaposition. It was elation and total frustration. You wanted to rip your hair out. Sorry, Chris. I know you don't have any hair, but you know.
Sorry, that's pretty offensive to me.
I'm sorry. I'm not saying the Sharks made you do that. I'm just saying.
I'm saying it. Maybe his beard hair.
It's from yes, the early. This is from the early decade of Sharks hockey. You know, this is from the 2000s decade.
The Kevin Constantine era. Well, quickly, let's break down that first period in scoring because it came quick, it came fast, and yes, that's a hashtag hockey porn reference. Joe Thornton with his 9th goal of the season from Joe Pavelski, looking very Thornton-esque behind the net, very reminiscent of 2007-2008 Joe Thornton setting up in the back there. Derek Stepan answers right back from Perlini and Panic. That was 9:01 in the first. Joe Pavelski then scores his 9th goal on the power play. Initially, it looked like it was Hertl's, but it did actually go off Joe Pavelski and then go off, I believe it was Jason Demers. And that was at 10:59 in the first. Alex Goligoski comes right back at 12:16 in the first to tie it up with Derek Stepan with his 19th assist. Logan Couture then fires back and gets the Sharks back the lead 3-2. With Donskoy and Burns with the assist there. Burns at 25 assists now. Christian Fisher then scores to tie it up once again, 14:01 in the first by Kevin Connaughton with the primary assist there, actually the only assist. So going into that second period, it was a 3-3 game. Very high offensive output, very high in the scoring chances department. I mean, in that first period, we had 16-9 shots in favor of the Sharks. The Sharks were just really all over the Coyotes in that early going. Going over into the second period, Jonas Donskoy scores his 9th of the season. That's going to be a recurring theme here, folks. He gets an assist from the, I guess, the enigma that is Mikhail Bodker with his 7th assist. Dell notching his first NHL point. At 17:07 in the second period, it was kind of a little bit laggy there in that first 15 minutes of the second period. It looked like they kind of fell back into that defensive game. However, the Sharks in the third period did let up and allow the Coyotes back into the game at 3:31 in the third. Arizona scores. It's Olivan Ekman-Larsson from Dvorak and Keller. Josh Archibald then gives the Coyotes the lead 5-4 with Jacob Chychrun and Dvorak gaining the assists there. And Donskoy with the Sharks hanging on by the skin of their teeth, literally, with 19:44 gone in the third period. Jonas Donskoy ties it up with a Burns deflection that came off of, I believe it was Demers, victimized once again. Donskoy kind of following that up, getting a garbage goal, but it's a goal nonetheless. Burns and Tierney come in on the assists on that. And then we get kind of an interesting goal from Mark Edward Vlasic, just kind of cleaning up the trash there. Pavelski and Thornton in on that goal. So the big fellas, I mean, Pavelski, Thornton, and Burns, all really tallying in. But I think the number one star of the night's got to be Jonas Donskoy. Guys, what did you guys think of just the big players and Jonas Donskoy just, I mean, really driving the ship tonight?
Oh, yeah. No, Donskoy, I think someone was saying on Twitter, might have been Zach, about that he was carrying them on his back all night. Like, I mean, there's other guys who performed offensively, but I mean, Donskoy was everywhere. And the, for every time he scored, he had several other opportunities. I mean, there was that wicked dangle where he passed it around to himself between his legs, and that he almost scored on that one, then scored a moment later. But tonight, I mean, I didn't see the three stars yet. I can only assume he was the number one star by a mile, because that he just the energy and everything he was doing all night was crazy good.
Tonight's three stars were, in fact, Jonas Donskoy with your first star, Joe Thornton with your second star, and Mark Edward Vlasic with your third. Jumbo, I believe, passes Adam Oates for all time, 17th all time in NHL scoring, or tied with Adam Oates.
He tied him. I think they said they gave him another assist, so I don't know if they changed the points afterwards. I don't know if that was the tying one or if that was the passing him up, but at the very least, he's tied with him.
Right. And now a little bit interesting too. We're kind of getting a little bit of information on some trade front activity. It looks like Dylan DeMello will be coming off the IR either Sunday or Monday, necessitating a move of some sort, whether it's going to be a forward like, Marcus Sorensen going down, or it's going to be a trade or a waiver move. Maybe the Sharks trying to put down Hansen or put down Paul Martin, but it seems like there was a little bit of a rumor going around that Paul Martin was being actively shopped. I don't see how they're going to move him without retaining some salary, but we've got a check-in from Puck Guy himself from the tank. Puck Guy, how was the game atmosphere tonight?
Hey guys, crazy game. Holy crap. Crowd was into it loud and boisterous. Of course, when you have 6 goals in the first period, that tends to happen. Also, you know, with Donskoy, hashtag Donskoy Dirty Dangles, I mean, tend to get the crowd really into it. And then, you know, just how this game seemingly ended, just really brought out the sellout crowd to fruition. And, I don't know if you were able to see it or not, but it was a nice partial whiteout for the team that actually started the whole whiteout in back in their days in Winnipeg. So craziness tonight at the tank, but a great crowd, very loud crowd, very woofful crowd. But yeah.
Hey, Puck Guy. I want to get your quick thoughts on a Paul Martin move. I think it came out during the game that Paul Martin was being actively shopped. Oh, I mean, what is your initial reactions to that? Do you think he should still be on the team? What kind of net we could get back for him just before you head out?
Yeah, you know, the thing is with Martin, I'm considering what has transpired with him this season. I don't know if you can get much back from him, especially his age-wise. I mean, up until the season, I thought he was still a very serviceable defenseman, but it's interesting to see who would go after him. Maybe you get some retained salary you would have to take care of, and thankfully the Sharks have plenty of room to do so. But hopefully you get, you know, fingers crossed, maybe a mid-level pick.
Yeah,
out of it, if anything.
I think somebody was floating around the idea of a third or fourth based on cap, based on salary retention and the desperation of the team looking for a player like that. I know Ian Reid was saying a second rounder. I think that's a little high, dependent. I mean, that would be the Sharks retaining the max they could. And I think that's only up to half of the contract, I believe, is the terms of that.
If I believe so, yes.
So I don't know. I don't know exactly what's happening, but you know, Paul Martin has been a good soldier. He's been a healthy scratch for the last, I would say 4 or 5 games since his conditioning stint down in the Barracuda. And I mean, they're going to have a logjam. And I think right now the path of least resistance is to move Marcus Sorensen down. I guess that is the last question that I will ask and pose to you. What did you think of that fourth line? It seemed like they were kind of benched in the third.
Yeah, after those 2 quick goals that the Desert Dogs scored, I mean, they were in the score now to get the game tied mode. So, of course, the fourth line, as we've seen in the past with PDB, gets benched to make way for more chances from, you know, the top 9. Per se, but we'll see. I mean, I thought overall it was a wild, crazy game. I thought, you know, Wedgwood played well. I thought, you know, Dell played good in relief, and Joner. Oh God, wasn't pretty.
Joner.
It was not great. It was pretty ugly. Well, Puck Guy, thank you for the check-in. Have a safe drive back. And we will catch you on Monday. I believe you're driving the show Monday, right?
Maybe. Okay.
He's like, are you going to make me do that?
Well, we'll see you when you see you, I guess.
We'll see. Have a great one, Rocket. The hair looks lovely.
Thank you. It's a new one.
What about my hair, you jerk?
Mine.
Yeah, that just to fill to kind of go on that fourth line bit there. That fourth line is pretty brutal if you just look at the numbers. I mean, like -4 for Gaudreau, -4 for Carlson. Sorensen is only a -2 because he did not play a single shift in the fourth, or sorry, third period. So or the fourth. I mean, a lot of guys didn't play in OT because the Coyotes are so busy trying to play keep away. But
yeah, I noticed that
brutally bad fourth line tonight. I mean, they were responsible for a lot of those goals against.
I seriously thought that Arizona was just going to try to, you know, play grab ass and keep away and run it out and just try to beat us in the shootout.
That's what it seemed like. But I mean, right? They should have been careful. Donskoy was on fire, and therefore he's pretty good in the shootout too. So
I didn't know that could be a strategy. Yeah, just play keep away for a good solid 3 minutes, 5 minutes, you know, and then we get through this, and then we'll just beat him in the shootout. Okay. Who does that?
I mean, Rocket, I did hear you chime in a little bit on Martin Jones. Mm. What did you see from him tonight?
Oh, poor Martin Jones. Some of it was him. Some of it was not him. But yeah, when you look at the amount of shots versus goals, that definitely, when it's time for a change, it needed to happen. It just...
When your Joner needs a change.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, this was his stat line. He had 3 saves out of 6 shots on goal. I mean, for a 500 save percentage, it was bad, and it was actually the quickest pull in his NHL career. The quickest time being pulled. It was, I mean, let's say 1 to 2 of those goals, he was really left hanging out to dry. I mean, there was one that was just, there was nothing he could do. But that first goal where he gives up that short side post was not good, and I think the third goal was not very good either. And I've been harping on his positioning, especially with the 5-hole and him going down too quickly and not covering up the 5-hole either with the blocker or with the stick, because it just seems like right now he's vulnerable when he's going side to side or going down into the butterfly.
So there's some numbers that Zach the Bear put out there. It was a month or two ago, but on average, Jones is actually he's well above average when it comes to really close, really high danger shots. And he's generally above average when it comes to really low danger shots, but it's that medium area where it's not quite as dangerous, maybe, you know, from the side, in areas outside the slot, that he's below average on. It's the ones that's like, he should have had that. That's because he makes a lot of saves he shouldn't be able to make. And then he'll have ones like that are pretty mystifying. Like how that first one absolutely should have had that one. The one, you know, on the breakaway, understandable how that could go in. It would have been really nice if he could have made that save. And the other one, you know, it was a odd deflection. And I didn't blame him on that one. That one's just, that's kind of bad luck. The Coyotes got some really fortunate bounces, I think, too. Like, to give proper credit where it's due.
Well, okay. You have to remember, too, that the Coyotes are aware that the San Jose Sharks have a kryptonite, and that kryptonite is to play your backup goalie. Yeah.
Didn't work tonight.
It almost did, though. So... is it because we had to pull our goalie and get our backup goalie to combat their backup goalie? And our backup goalie is just a little bit more okayer than their backup goalie is?
I mean, mathematically, I could see how that could work out. You know, it's kind of, you know, canceling it out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for me at least, I felt that this bye week was going to be really, really important for Jones. He just didn't look right. His positioning didn't signal that he was very confident, and I thought that he was still kind of working through that shoulder kind of neck pinch that he had. What was it, about a month ago? But to me, his body language is not confident right now, and he's not getting set in that butterfly as quick as we've seen him before. So I don't know if he needs to take some time and work on it with Hedberg. If he needs to maybe work on some side to side drills with Nabby. Somebody was saying, well, maybe Nabby's rubbing off on him. Yeah, Matt Nabby had a propensity for giving up those medium softies for sure. But I mean, I don't know, guys. I mean, do you think that he looks a little fragile right now? Is it a mental thing? Is it something physical?
He looks shaky for sure. I don't know if it's physical or not. My main concern is get it out of your system now, and hopefully not in the way that takes them out of the playoff hunt. But, you know, that's really what it is when it comes with goalies. The elite ones, you don't need an elite goalie to win the cup. You just need a goalie who's playing really well when the playoffs roll around. So that's my main thing is with Jones, is like, get it out of your system now. Get it right. I hope it's not physical, because then it could probably linger longer. But I think if it's a mental thing and he's just kind of not feeling it right now, I think that could be worked out in a matter of a month or so. So I would hope.
Rocket, what are your initial thoughts? When I say that, you know, does he have an injury or is it mental? What's the first thing that pops into your head?
I would imagine it's mental.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, his overall body language doesn't speak of a goaltender that is really confident in himself. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on that. Luckily, we have a great backup in Dell, you know, a luxury that we've rarely had in Sharks Land. I think going back to the Toskala, Kiprasov, three-headed monster, Nabokov, I mean, I think that's the best time goalie-wise we've ever had. Mind you, all of those player or those goalies were students of Warren Strelo, great Sharks goalie coach, by the way. Anyhow, just kind of quickly breaking down the stats a little bit more, kind of diving a little bit more deeper into the whole game. The shots on goal were pretty insane. 44 shots for the Sharks, 21 shots for the Coyotes. The Sharks doing great job with the shot suppression. And I'm sure Chris is going to chime in with some possession numbers too. I think they outpossessed the Coyotes by a far margin. 58% on the draws, 1-for-1 on the power play, 1-for-1 on the PK. Hits 27-12 in favor of the Coyotes, but we all know that's a flawed stat, especially with the Sharks possessing the puck. Blocks 21-17 in favor of the Coyotes, so that wasn't too bad. The giveaways were 2-1. It was 4-8. The Sharks giving away the puck 8 times. 8 seems kind of a generous number to me. It seemed in that first there was quite a bit of giveaways, and I think that they probably could have called more than that. I know that, Chris, you had a little bit to say at the opening about giveaways in that first period.
Yeah, I mean, there was some very inopportune ones, and the possession stats work out almost exactly the same as shots. They almost doubled them up in that respect. But what really stands out, though, looking at the more advanced stats, is scoring chances. The Coyotes actually were ahead of them the entire night on scoring chances. The Sharks outpossessed them all night, but that's what I mean when I said the quality. They gave up a lot of quality chances, whether it was a turnover or the Coyotes getting those dangerous chances just where they get up right in the slot and there's defensive breakdowns, 2-on-1s, those types of things. So that's really a big part of what allowed it to happen, was that they were getting quality. They weren't getting much, but what they were getting, it was good.
Right. And Rocket, I mean, we've seen this progress in the last month where the defense has kind of just caved away into maybe floating a forward a little high in the zone so they can get some breakouts a little bit easier. But I think it might be their defense is suffering because of it. What do you think of the overall defensive game in the last month?
Oh, you know, there's always that tendency to overcorrect when you see there's a problem, then you figure out how to fix it. So Sharks were, you know, they had the defense locked down. Everything was super great, but their offensive production was absolutely nil. So yeah, they are taking a little bit more of an offensive risk. And they are suffering for it. I'm pretty sure there's enough time, though, for them to, you know, just push the needle back to center and hit the gas and go. I think that this is a good indication that this coaching staff is flexible, that they listen and they make adjustments. I think that once they get this whole Burns partner down and they figure out who's actually going to be in the defensive lineup, I think that's really going to solidify more of just the ability of this team to make faster corrections. I don't know how else to say.
Defensively, if you look at their best defensive games and their worst defensive games of the last month or so, I mean, their best one was against the Kings, which is not a speed team. It's kind of a more plodding team. And then some of their worst games were against the Canucks, obviously against Dallas. A lot of it really, that's their kryptonite is teams that can play, then get up the ice quickly. Cause
yeah,
it can you know, get very ugly.
And I think Rocket, I just wanted to really quickly chime in on something that you said about the flexibility of the coaching staff. I think that that's a really good point because we, you know, especially us here at Teal Town, I mean, we dish out criticism quite a bit, but I think that we should also recognize the coaching staff pulled the Burns-Dylan pairing about halfway into that game because they were being exposed. Both of them were jumping up in that play, and the Coyotes' fast forwards were getting behind them. And they put Joakim Ryan back with Burns, and that seemed to settle him down quite a bit. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to say that was a really great point.
Yeah, I mean, and also you saw that one two-on-one earlier where Dylan went with the starfish. He's like, well, Burns out of the play and can't do the starfish. So Dylan
that
goes
made me mad.
and does the starfish defense. Like, no, you're supposed to be
taking my shoe off and throwing it at him. I would have been mad.
Like, no, dude, you're supposed to be the guy who doesn't do that. Like, that's
right.
You're playing the straight man to Burns's, you know, crazy guy.
Bad cop.
Leave the starfishing to Burns. Don't do the starfish. No.
Well, quickly, let's go over the time on ice because I think it's pretty interesting. Just the way everything was divvied out today. Pavelski, 1843 time on ice. Thornton, 1850. Sorensen, like I said, that fourth line got benched pretty much halfway into the second. That pretty much not heard from in the third. Sorensen with 7 minutes, 43 seconds. Goodrow, a little bit more respectable at 10 minutes. Donskoy, 17:53. It's almost 18 minutes of ice time. Timo Meier, about 17:42. Couture, 18:14. Believe it or not, your ice time leader tonight, Tomáš Hertl at 19:13. He had 8 seconds of power play time and 33 seconds of penalty kill time. So he had a lot of even strength minutes tonight. Chris Tierney, 17:20, Kevin LeBanc, 14:37, Melker Carlson, 9:39, and Mikael Bodker, a respectable 15:41 in the time on ice department. Heading over to the defense, Brendan Dillon at 17 minutes, Mark-Edward Vlasic at 22 minutes, Joakim Ryan at 18 minutes, Justin Braun, 22 minutes, Tim Heed, 18 minutes, and Brent Burns, 24:44. So I really do like the ice time distributions there, but you did see that Brendan Dillon did take a little bit of a back seat to Joakim Ryan. Tim Heed also really had a nice game tonight as well. I think, though, that standout line 5-on-5 was the Couture LeBanc hurdle line. Do you guys think that's true, or do you guys think that there was another line that really just drove possession and really was the highlight?
I think in terms of two-way hockey, that was probably the best line, and just being able to play good. You know, I didn't see many bad defensive breakdowns with them out there. I didn't, you know, saw plenty of possession. Couture obviously made some nice plays too. They had some good chances that didn't go in as well. So I would definitely say that was probably their best line two ways for sure.
I think that Kevin LeBanc had a little bit of a struggle with this team being as fast as it was. I saw him kind of panic in a couple of situations where he was forced to make a decision with the puck a little bit sooner than he wanted to. I think that's probably just because he's not used to this kind of speed. And maybe he's rusty. Who knows? Maybe not used to the bye week either. Hey, there's not used to a lot of things. But I did notice that the younger gentlemen seem to kind of freak themselves out against the faster teams.
Well, and we did see him have some nice moves tonight and really, I mean, keep up in the speed department. But I think you're right. I think because they were keeping up with the speed, maybe the hockey IQ wasn't exactly following them. You know, so they had to make real quick moves on the fly, which is not really something that they have to do quite a bit. I mean, so, you know, it's a little interesting, but I thought Kevin LeBanc played an okay game. I thought he made some pretty nice cross-ice passes. He you know, he continues to show me that he's got really good vision on the ice. And I think Timo Meier as well has shown that, you know, he works well with the Joes, and he created a lot of space for them tonight, and it's partly why they were able to get those goals. So
I like that kid.
Quietly he's turning into and maturing into that power forward Sharks thought that they were getting. I think it just took him a little bit of time to adjust to the NHL game, because as a, you know, as a 6'2 kid, I mean, he was literally bullying his way in the QMJHL, and you know, just out physically outmatching the other kids on the ice. So kind of adjusting to the North American, you know, professional style, it took him a little bit, but he's coming along, and I think he's coming along nicely.
Yeah, and I think credit where it's due, Bodker was not horrible tonight. He actually kept up pretty well with that Tierney and Donskoy. I mean, Donskoy carried that line, but overall, I mean, he had help there. Bodker made several good passes to him. He did not drag that line down. So credit where it's due there. I know AJ, you know, it's one of AJ's favorite people to pick on, but he wasn't terrible. And yeah, Joel, I think, yeah, Joel Ward was the one who was scratched tonight, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Ward was scratched tonight, along with Yannick Hansen and Paul Martin. Those were your official scratches. Again, Dylan DeMello is on IR.
Gen X saying we give credit for not being horrible. Yes. In if it's Bodker, honestly, yes, because that's how low the bar has got.
No, that's how low the bar has gotten
at this point.
Yes, Chris is 100% correct on this. We are in the sub basement right now.
Like right about now, if he's not a drag on a line that he's on, I guess that's a good, you know, as long as he's not a negative, that's a good game for Bodker lately. Cause that's, I mean, he's, you know, we've been over this ad nauseum, but he's a free agent bust.
He's literally not good for anything but speed.
And I think maybe let's roll back over to Paul Martin a little bit more, because I know we touched on the trade rumors. Someone who is definitely not a free agent bust for the Sharks a number of years ago, but it would definitely not hurt at all if they could offload that I think $4.25 million, I want to say, if they could offload half or more of that, because that would give them somewhere between $7 and $9 million of cap space around the deadline, which means they'd have enough. If they wanted to make a big move, they would have the cap space to make a big move.
Currently, the Sharks are sitting at $11,344,000 in cap space. I think that is
even more.
Yeah, I think that is just because of the way that the injured reserve is working. And yeah, but their projected cap space is $5 million or so. And on Paul Martin, it's $4.85 million per year for this year and next.
So if they get rid of Paul Martin,
you move half of that, that gives you $7 to $8 million. Sorry.
No, I was asking a question. So if they get rid of Paul Martin, what does that raise the cap to?
Well, it depends on if they have to retain any salary, but if we're thinking the worst case scenario where they'll have to retain up to half of the salary, that would still give them about $7 to $8 million to play with, especially if they're getting a rental in return or a pending free agent that they don't, then the money kind of is a little different because they're only paying for the remainder of the salary, and that's what the cap hit is. It's a little interesting.
On retained salary, is that just for the current year or is it for the following year as well? Because I know he has one more year left on his deal.
It would be for both. And they can structure it as well. I think that they can do a retained salary for 1 year, but not for another. And I think they can only do it for the first year, but I'm not a CBA expert.
Gen X point out, you know, what would they do with the money that they would have, you know, this UEFA class is weak.
So honestly, who's the top three of the US this UEFA class?
Oh goodness. I mean, John Tavares is probably gotta be number one. You've got Evander Kane. Let's see, who else?
No, thank you.
I mean, I don't
pass.
I don't want the Sharks to touch that with a 10-foot pole, but I mean, I think as far as pure talent goes, that's what you're going to get. Quickly, I'm just going to move over to free agents. Let's go order by, let's go by points.
And I think there's, you know, we talk about free agents, but there's always the possibility of whoever's on the trade block too. And with, you know, with cap space to work with, they would actually be able to talk about a serious move. You know, I don't know if the Sharks would make a blockbuster trade, but it definitely would be more on the table than it's been past years where they've always been right up against the cap. And like the idea of a blockbuster trade is almost impossible.
I was about to say somebody in the chat, Rob Eamon saying James Neal. And then Tracy Kelba saying, Neal isn't going anywhere. I'm like, I don't think Vegas would trade Neal. I don't think they would let him go.
At this point, with Vegas being, you know, as good as they are. Yeah,
Gen X in the chat pointing out half of Vegas' roster is UFA. point. Okay.
Part of the reason why some of those guys were exposed because they're, you know, going to be
UFA or UFA. John Tavares, Josh Bailey, and Mark Stone are your 1, 2, 3 in points currently. That will be UFA or RFA. And if you just want straight UFAs, it's going to be John Tavares, Josh Bailey, and Evander Kane is your 1, 2, 3. Some interesting names. Carlson's an RFA. William Carlson, who is doing quite well. You've got, you know, if you want to go the D-man route, there's John Carlson from the Capitals, although he's kind of slow. Nemestikov is, you know, 25, but he's an RFA. Dylan Larkin's an RFA. I mean, geez. Paul Stastny's a UFA, 32. So it's kind of thin. I mean, and we keep saying this every year, but it's a kind of a thin class. James Van Riemsdyk's a little bit interesting. 28, he's a UFA. Yeah, it's about really. I mean, Patrick Hornquist, Tyler Bozak. I mean, the list is really thin. It's really thin. So
yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd necessarily even want them trying to go out there trying to sign, you know, big names. You know, it seems like a lot of the best deals that they've made over the years have been very unassuming ones. I mean, Paul Martin didn't really get much talk when we signed him, but he's been a pretty big asset for the last couple of years, which is why I'd say even if we do end up eating that deal in the last year, I would say he's been by far a net positive for this team. You know, he's been the guy who's helped Burns get his game from being very all over the place to, well, being all over the place, but in a good way.
Yeah, and I also think Bugner also really helped him out, and I think he was the kind of coach to pump up the tires, so to speak, of Burns, and really just put a lot of faith in him, which I think is what he needed, because I feel like Big Bird, Larry Robinson, just kind of didn't want him as a defenseman and probably was very hypercritical. I mean, of course, you have a Hall of Fame defenseman who's won a bajillion Stanley Cups, and, you know, I would venture to guess that he's probably listening to him, but still it's not exactly the kind of coach that he needed. And
yeah, I mean, I think he probably would have wanted to turn him into a, you know, defenseman that he's not. Like, I think he has probably had a very specific idea of what he wanted him to be. And if he couldn't be that, well, he didn't want him as a defenseman. And it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things you have to accept talented players as they are. It's like trying to complain Joe Thornton doesn't pass or doesn't shoot the puck enough. It's like, you're never going to change that. You got to let the great player do what the great player does and find ways to work within that. Cause yeah, if you try to turn Burns into not a crazy wild man defenseman, who's going to take risk, who's going to do things that'll make you have a heart attack, then it just ain't going to work. That he's never going to be that guy.
So, we are at the halfway point of the season. The Sharks stand on the outside looking in, although they have games in hand on everyone above them in the standings. They're currently at 50 points, with Calgary sitting at 52 points. The Sharks currently sit third in goals against, and goals for is pretty bad. I mean, they're tied with Vancouver still for goals for. So
tied, what do we, bottom of the league, I think.
Or? Yeah, bottom, close to the bottom, if not the bottom. So overall, what have we thought about the Sharks team? Have they exceeded expectations, met expectations, below expectations, even. I mean, we can break it down by player, or we can do it defense, offense, or we can just do the whole team. Rocket, what stands out to you?
Never underestimate the power of Sandstorm.
That's one way of putting it.
Definitely one way of putting it. I guess very, we could say cathartic and very energetic, but also kind of gets annoying after a while.
And be sure to hit us in the chat on this one with your kind of mid-season thoughts here, you know, grades or your thoughts as far as expectations go.
Chris, what are your overall, just your overall thoughts of the season at the halfway point? If you want to add any grades to the offense, defense.
I mean, I would say that they've kept pace enough that, you know, you don't win the Stanley Cup in October, November, December, but you can definitely get yourself out of the running early. And that's what they haven't done, is they have not gotten themselves out of the running. I mean, all the best playoff runs they've had have been with a second half push and getting into the playoffs playing well. And that, you know, that's what happened a couple years ago when they went to the finals. So, you know, I don't know where this team will go, but they haven't taken themselves out of contention. And right now they don't look all that impressive, but they don't look like a horrible, this team does not have any shot at the playoffs kind of team. They look like a team that's inconsistent and has certain weaknesses for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the best way to put it right now. For me, at least, they're at about expectations. You know, I thought that they would challenge for third or a wild card position. I didn't think that they had enough to get in second or first. I mean, I thought maybe they could kind of battle around for second place if the Pacific was going to be weaker than we expected it to be. I mean, we expected Vancouver to be a lot better, or not Vancouver, excuse me, Edmonton, bite my tongue, Anaheim to be a lot better. I mean, Arizona, we thought might take some strides this year with all the people that they brought in. However, I mean, the Pacific is not as good as it has been in the past. The Sharks don't have very many remaining Pacific Division games, so they're going to have to make up some ground against the Central, and they're going to have to make up some ground against the Eastern Conference. I mean, we've yet to see the Red Wings this year. Who else have we haven't seen yet from the East Coast? I mean, I think we
were taking our Tampa beatings, thankfully.
Yeah, we've taken our Tampa beatings for sure. New York played them. So I don't know. I guess it's majority of its Central Division. So
I think that, yeah, a lot of it should be there because, I mean, I know we got a lot of East Coast very early in the season. I think like we only played like one, if I recall correctly, in like the first month, maybe played like one Western team in the entire first month or so. So I think they got checked a lot of that off. And I think some of them are going to come around in February and March out here. It'll mostly, I think they'll be at home because we did like a East Coast swing or two.
AJ chiming in. Thanks, AJ. Chicago and Minnie, we haven't seen. I thought we saw
them. Oh, we have seen Minneapolis. Yeah. Or Minnesota, I mean.
Yeah, Minnesota. Yeah, they were playing Minneapolis.
Yeah. Well, technically they're actually in St. Paul, but
oh goodness. The Twin Cities, ladies and gentlemen. But at least for me, on point, we thought that this team was going to be very defensive oriented. I think I was worried about primarily the goal scoring. For me, the kids have stepped up, maybe not as much as I expected that they would at this point. I figured that Timo Meier would have a little bit more goals. I think it's nice to see Donskoy really bounce back quite well from an abysmal season last year. Hurdle has taken some really good growth and stride, really stepped up in the absence of Couture. But, you know, we're still seeing the ripple effects of Patrick Marleau leaving in the offseason. I mean, you know, everybody's going to berate because, oh, well, you know, it wouldn't give Meyer and it wouldn't give LeBanc the shot they're being given now. But still, you know, it'd be nice to have another 10, 12 goal scorer now at this point on the team.
Though not at the price that Marleau would come at, though.
Exactly. But, you know, all the goals right now we can get are really important. And I think Rocket was right. I think that the response by the coaching staff is to fly a forward high and take a little bit of risk, because I think we're seeing now more stretch passes than we have at the beginning of the season. You know, I consistently notice Donskoy or Tierney, that high forward being ready to be stretched past. I mean, we've seen Tierney go on quite a few breakaways, both shorthanded and 5-on-5. We've seen Hurdle go in. You know, I feel like the coaching staff has heard the hue and cry of they're playing too locked down. But I think that the pendulum has swung so far over to the offensive side, the defensive side of the game is really, unfortunately, is being negatively affected. And I'd rather have them somewhere in the middle where they're scoring 3 to 4 goals a night and giving up like 2 goals. You know, that's going to be really where they're going to make their bread and butter, is going to be those 3-2 games, 2-1 games. They don't have the superstar talent, unfortunately, to keep up with the West. Especially look at Vegas. You look at Vegas, you look at Winnipeg, you look at Nashville, St. Louis. I mean, those high octane offense, and Dallas. I mean, just look at how they got spanked in Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas shredded them. And I'm just looking ahead at the schedule here. Yeah, so actually, yeah, we haven't seen, I think someone in the chat referred to it as Schittsburg, which I think I'm okay calling it that.
I'm all right with that.
Swear jar. Have to see them still. Yeah, there's a there's a decent amount of Western or Pacific Division games near. I see Ducks, I see Coyotes, Vegas, Vancouver, Oilers. I mean, all in the month of February there. But yeah, St. Louis, I don't think we've seen them yet this year, and that's always one I want to bug our good friend Kurt Price over at Let's Go Blues, see if he wants to chat when that comes around. But yeah, there's a decent amount of division games left, but I think you're right, though, is if they might get into the playoffs, but I just don't see, unless they find another gear on offense, like they need more scoring to be able to go somewhere. Maybe I think they could lock teams down enough when they're dialed in, because the teams that give them the most fits are the ones of those young guys who move really quickly, maybe a little out of control, but that's what gives them the most trouble. But yeah, I don't see a way right now that I think this is really a contending team. This is a maybe make the playoffs, maybe win around depending on matchup kind of team. That's, you know, at the 41 game mark, that's what I see.
And for me, I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate there, only because I feel like in the playoffs, the game slows down to a glacier's pace, and that does play into the strength of the Sharks. And if they can ratchet back that defense and have enough scoring and have Jones be on his game, they could be a handful to play.
I mean, yeah, exactly. If Jones' head is in the right place and he's having that, I mean, 'cause that's what I said before, is like if he's playing right at that time, that can make all the difference if you have a goalie who's playing well.
I mean, you know, we saw Halak in Montreal take a Montreal team that had no sniff at the Eastern Conference go. I mean, so we've seen it before. Quickly, let's go over the standings. We're going to go over scores, too, to kind of wrap this up. We're at the 45-minute mark, and we're doing quite well with being on topic. So quickly, over in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals lead the Metropolitan Division with 59 points, Columbus with 53 points, and New Jersey still hanging on. You know, they have been pretty abysmal lately at 4-3-3, but they're hanging on. Tampa Bay leading the Atlantic. Of course, they're the class of the Eastern Conference, and quite frankly, the class of the NHL at 65 points. Boston holding on to that second spot quite amazingly with 41 points at 55 points. 41 games played, 55 points, excuse me. Toronto with 53 points in your third position. The New York Rangers, 49 points, and Pittsburgh are your wild card. Lurking in the shadows, though, Philadelphia at 48 points. They have quietly climbed back into the race. The Islanders are also in the hunt, as well as Carolina, each with 48 points. Going over to the Western Conference, the conference that we all know and love, over in the Central, Winnipeg leading the Central with 59 points, Nashville in second place with 56 points, St. Louis in third place with 55 points. Heading over to the Pacific, 61 points for Vegas. The team that we all thought was going to be hot garbage will not go away. They're just, that team is just clicking on all cylinders right now. I think the coaching staff have done a wonderful job getting them up to date.
Eric, I don't even think they have cylinders. I think they run on like a dilithium crystal core or some sort of space age shit like that. They are so next level. They are so 2178. It's not even funny.
They have a warp core, I guess, or
either that
or hyperdrive.
Either that or a shit ton of Red Bull vodka, because they are
that in- too.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of Red Bull vodka, I would assume, out there.
There's a holodeck. It's just, it's fun.
Well, it's Vegas. Of course, there's a holodeck out there.
Los Angeles holding up the second spot with 53 points with 43 games played, which kind of leaves a little bit of room, a little bit of wiggle room for the Sharks, because the Sharks are sitting right outside at 50 points, but they've only got 41 games played. Calgary in third place, that they are occupying the place that the Sharks used to have at 52 points. Heading over to the wild card. First wild card is Minnesota at 52 points and Dallas at 51 points. Like I said before, San Jose at 50, Chicago at 50, Colorado at 49, Anaheim at 49, and Edmonton at 43. However, Edmonton's got the most games played, tied with Winnipeg in the Western Conference at 46. They are running out of runway, and we've been saying it over and over again. I just think that they lost too much ground at the beginning of the season to kind of, you know, make their way back in. I mean, I've seen Stranger Things, but with how up and down they're doing, Cam Talbot not doing so hot, and everybody not named Connor McDavid is not doing so great either on that team.
So a couple comments from the chat. Gen X, as always, pointing out that he did not say Vegas is going to be bad. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we know you're right about Vegas, Gen X. Keep patting yourself on the back there, buddy. And then some Nick Neff Tepit saying something about they aren't exactly hot garbage. There's garbage other teams didn't want. Well, I would say they're definitely they're hot something, because they're out there in the desert where it is freaking hot. But yeah, no, I mean the expansion rules now are so much better than they were when the Sharks got in.
Oh,
it actually occurred to the league that it probably isn't good for you to have that new team get kicked around for a couple years. Maybe give them some fighting chance to actually not. not get destroyed, which, yeah, it makes perfect sense, right? But that didn't occur to them 20 years ago.
Let's not talk about Eric Lindros being first overall going to the Sharks, and that's who should have been the Sharks first overall. Let's just not talk about that. Anyhow,
yeah, that's not a soft spot.
What, Pat Maroon? No, Fat Balloon.
Fat Balloon. That's,
yeah,
that's
Fat Balloon. Hey, I'm really looking forward. I mean, no offense to the Sharks team. I'm always a Sharks fan, but let's be realists here. We'll be lucky if we get to the second round. And I would say that this is going to be a really interesting final between Vegas and Tampa Bay.
Interesting. Vegas and Tampa Bay is who you're calling, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. If St. Louis has to play Chicago in the first round, it would be so funny. Ooh. It would be so funny. But I think I circle St. Louis as maybe the team from the West, St. Louis, Winnipeg. I just don't buy it. Los Angeles is going to keep this scoring pace up. Vegas hasn't seen they haven't seen playoff hockey yet, and for the first time for their franchise, that might be a lot of pressure for them in the playoffs. I don't like Dallas's defensive game. Minnesota is just kind of an enigma to me. I mean, I don't know what to make of that team. Their defense.
Minnesota Sharks Midwest.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they're just blah. I just don't know what they are. So, you know,
yeah, this year especially, their identity just seems kind of like, I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah. So. I mean, if we want to quickly just kind of roll around who we think the Sharks could be a trade partner with, I mean, you're looking at Arizona, looking at maybe Vancouver, but I think really where you're going to make your money is going to be, they might, you know, if Philadelphia, if Ron Hextall is smoking some good stuff, they might have an opportunity to ship Martin out there. I mean, Martin is pretty accustomed to Philadelphia, or excuse me, the Pittsburgh.
Well, if he's not smoking some good stuff, we can send it to him, you know?
Yeah,
well, Martin, after all.
Yeah, exactly. I think Philadelphia might be an interesting trade partner. They've got lots and lots of just depth and, you know, assets there.
Toronto might be an interesting one to mention in the chat there, and I would actually agree because I mean, they're so desperate they played Roman Polak. So that should tell you how desperate they are if you have to play Roman Polak even one game.
Hey, has Auntie Niemi been a Leaf this year yet?
No, I believe he's with the other hockey mecca.
Oh, all right. So, like, he's due in, like, sometime in February or March, yeah, then.
The five past Niemi World Tour.
Got it.
Yep. Yeah. I think Boston could also use a defenseman. Toronto, Boston, Jersey, Columbus. You know, those are all teams that could use a spare defenseman, especially if they have their eyes on something a little bit more. I mean, Columbus seems to have a pretty good pipeline. They seem to do well with their draft picks. That might be an interesting thing to maybe try and pry a C-level, B-level prospect out of Columbus.
What about Dallas?
I reemphasize Toronto because I just look, they have played Roman Polak for 26 games.
Oh yeah, no. Paul Martin is a definite upgrade to that pylon. I say that they close the Polak door and open the Martin burrito stand. Come on, yeah. Toronto, do it.
Well, Gen X point out Toronto isn't desperate; they're just mismanaging their decor. Well, it's like, well, hey, maybe the next thing they could mismanage would be hooking us up for Paul Martin.
Here, here.
You know, they could mismanage him all the way to Toronto. That'd be fine with me.
That being said, Lou Lamoriello does have a history of trading with Doug Wilson, and those two have hooked up quite a few times on some trades. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he returns to Pittsburgh. I mean, it could be an interesting little.
Very well loved there.
Yeah, a very interesting reunion.
Especially, and you know, next year's going to be a rebuild.
Right. I think the issue with Pittsburgh is definitely the cap. I mean, if you've got some kind of really bad cap hit going the other way, I mean, maybe like a Carl Hagelin, you know, he hasn't done exactly well this year. Taking the Sharks that back. Who else on here? Yeah, Carl Hagelin. I mean, I think that's kind of an interesting one because he's got $4 million on his cap hit. So if the Sharks traded Martin, kept half of his retained salary, and got Hagelin back, that would be a win-win. It's not out of the realm of possibility, and especially with the way that the defensive core is structured. I mean, Chris Letang, he misses Paul Martin, I think, you know? So I don't know, but quickly let's go around the league and do the hockey reach around. I mean, hockey wrap around or whatever, hockey porn.
Hockey reach around.
It's time for the After Dark hockey reach around.
And quick.
Bend over and touch your ankles.
If you haven't already bent over and touched your ankles, please go ahead and subscribe down there. There's a red button somewhere. We really appreciate it. We got actually one subscriber already tonight on the live show. Two, actually. Jorge Puente and Benzie Box. Thank you both. Thank you both for subscribing, and hopefully you'll like the content. Hopefully we try to keep it pretty mellow, pretty funny here. But quickly going over the scores tonight, the Islanders beat the Rangers 7-2. Red Wings get beaten by the Penguins 4-1. The Wild beat the Jets 4-1. Bruins beat the Canadiens 4-3. Final in a shootout, the rivalry is renewed. Chara dings a player. It was, oh goodness, Dano? I think it might have been Dano. Bings him in the head. He goes to the hospital. He's okay. Luckily, he's conscious and, you know, he's able to move all of his extremities, but he was stretchered off. It was kind of a scary moment. Flyers beat the Devils 5-3. Avalanche, who are coming on, they beat the Stars 4-1. The
Oilers beat the Golden Knights 3-2 in overtime. A contingent of 6,000 Oiler fans made the trip out to Vegas. I hear it was quite the raucous there. You had those winter birds heading down to Vegas to get a little bit of sunshine before they had to go back to the frigid hells that is Edmonton.
It's still cheaper for people in Edmonton to get a plane ticket to Las Vegas and a ticket to a Vegas Knights game and then a hotel in Las Vegas and a plane ticket home than it is for people in Edmonton to go see the Oilers in, what is it? Jones.
Rexall Place.
Yeah, Rexall Place.
Rexall
Place. That's essentially the story behind that.
Rogers Place. It's not Rexall.
Is it Rogers? Okay.
Rogers, Rexall, Stanky's Place. I don't care.
So I know the Leafs play in Rogers or Rogers Arena.
Arena. And then what the hell is Rogers Center in Vancouver, I think?
There's a lot of Rogers up there because Rogers is huge up there.
It's pretty much the AT&T of Canada. You know, it's either Rogers.
Made sweaters.
Right. Thought that they just made sweaters. The battle of the Southern California freeway system goes to the Ducks 4-2 against the Kings. Excuse me. The Duckies doing us a solid here and handing the Kings a loss, which kind of keep our hopes and dreams alive for that second place.
The I-5 rivalry.
Actually, that's the 405 rivalry.
Oh, 405 rivalry. I'm still learning all the freeways down here.
Get your freeway straight. You're now a Southern Californian.
Wow, I'm so not in the right state for this conversation.
And then the Sharks, of course, beat the Coyotes in overtime with it was a roller coaster of a ride, but it was a great ride. And you know what? It was a ride that we were happy to report on and happy to catch everybody up on. And also, you can catch up on us across social media platforms, being iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, of course, the replay on YouTube, and for any and all content, really, on TealTownUSA.com. We've got a lot of editorials. We've got some great writers on staff right now. You know, we did put out the call for people who want to maybe try and break into the podcasting, too. We'd love to get your feedback, but we'd also love to maybe do some interviews, talk to Eric Kura. We're definitely on the lookout for some more talent there, but on the writing side on Teal Town USA, they're doing quite a good job. So anyhow, for the crew, for Rocket Backhander and for Chris JWS, I'm Eric Landy, and we will see you for the matinee of the Sharks and the Kings. Have a great night, everybody.